season, and the joys of home grow dim, or just like a memory's distant glimmer. When you love and you are parted, and all Christmas cheer departed. It's sad, I say, when you're away from love on Christmas Day.
Welcome to a special Nocturnal Journal Christmas edition tonight. We've got a great, great show. We got the next hour, Maxwell Street musician Lefty Vince Johnson is going to play some Christmas tunes. Former Chicago comedian Mike Ostrowski is going to be calling in. We've got Nick Alex in the green room, owner of the Golden Apple. We're going to talk great Christmas memories of the Golden Apple Diner. And our first guest is the esteemed Mike Veck of the St. Paul Saints, Charleston River Dogs, Chicago White Sox. Mike, you there?
The esteemed, yeah. Merry Christmas, Mr. Hoax. I'm thrilled to be here, kind of. The Nocturnal Journal, though, I mean, it's a little earlier start for you, so
it is.
I'm a little shocked.
It is. You always told me if you needed a guest in a pinch hit, you'd be on board. So thanks for joining us for a little bit here.
I wasn't doing you a favor. I mean, let's face it. I mean, your listeners will understand that very quickly. They'll be like, hey, let's get rid of this problem. But I had a great Christmas. How was your Christmas? Did you have a good Christmas?
I was prepping the show all day, Mike. I was with my notes and picking all the music. You know, I love that. That's a Beach Boys song, you know, that Bill Murray and Phoenix did for that Paul Schaefer special, I think, a couple years ago, Alone on Christmas Day. Did you ever see that?
Yeah, I can't really discuss. I can't really discuss Mr. Murray right now. He showed up at the Hacienda last night with, I think, something approaching 267 gifts. None of which were wrapped. You know, that's tough. That's a tough assignment. I mean, I got some of the best elves in the country, but even they were humping it last night. I mean, and what's everybody sending? Here comes Santa Claus all around the internet. It's like they didn't know Bob Dylan had this wonderful sense of humor all this time. Suddenly it's like everywhere.
Well, you mentioned Murray. I kind of keep up to date with you, but I don't know much about the restaurant Harold's Cabin. You guys opened that over the summer down there in Charleston with Bill. And talk a little bit about that. I know it's in an old snow cone shop from the 1920s in Charleston. So pick the story up there.
Yeah, there's a huge history of Harold and Lillian were really settlers in the neighborhood around the Citadel. And so in the 20s, as you mentioned, it was a snow cone shop, and it became, over the years, so popular with people. It was the one place where you could go in Charleston where you could find a really fine cheese or a good cut of meat. And ultimately, they were absorbed, purchased by Piggly Wiggly, and they had, a little section of the store for delicacies and things like that. But the building sat there, and Bill and I kept riding by it, looking at it and going, boy, nobody would be dumb enough to buy that building the way it's fallen in on itself. And John Schumacher, then our historian partner in it, looked up the history, and so it's now become a community gathering place. We do everything from, from poetry readings and dance recitals, and obviously musicians like you're going to have a little later. And most importantly, what I was pleased about was over the Thanksgiving holiday, we changed the name to Mel's Cabin because one of our neighbors had been denied membership in a club here in Charleston. And we thought that it was not a good idea, so we changed the name in the middle of the night and hung up a sign that said, Mel's Cabin, where all are welcome, and we've had some fun with it. And that's kind of the community vibe that goes on in the cabin. Plus, the food's great. You know, we made the 100 most anticipated openings. We've been open about 3 years now, and, it's like a clubhouse. What can I tell you?
So is it really called Mel's Cabin now, not Harold's Cabin?
No, we just renamed it for 3 or 4 days because Melvin Brown was denied membership in the Rod and Gun Club here in Charleston. And since he lives right across the street from us, or catty corner, I guess more, He woke up in the morning. His wife got him a cup of coffee and said, because he's a an ICU doctor, 20-year Navy guy, but more importantly, he puts people back together in emergency rooms. So she hands him this cup of coffee and goes, you better go out to the front stoop and take a look what Beck and those idiots did, because they just renamed the cabin in your honor.
Oh, that's great. That's great. John Schumacher, he's from the River Dogs, right? Didn't he work with you, or is he still working with you at the River Dogs?
Yeah, he was really the guy who really brought food at the ballpark into the 21st century. Hey, like I mentioned earlier, Dave, you know, he's a historian, and so he would research different areas where we operated and find delicacies and things that were indigenous to that particular market, and then serve them. And, you know, that was particularly difficult in Charleston because it's such a food mecca.
Right.
And so, you know, 15 years ago when John joined us, I'd like to think we had good food, but we weren't serving she crab soup, and we weren't serving the home wrecker, which is, I think, something approaching a 4.5 to 6 pound hot dog that we serve. It takes a crane to order it, but he really revolutionized minor league baseball stadiums and food. Quite a talent.
What's coming up? Is it too early to talk about the 2019 season with some of your teams? What's new in St. Paul? Are you still involved in Normal over here in Illinois?
Well, the Normal has been sold, and of course we're still here in Charleston. But this is kind of the planning. This is the planning stage. So nothing's really been locked in stone, and the beauty of it is that after we celebrated the 40th anniversary of Animal House last year and had the world's largest food fight, the bar is very high. The bar is very high. We did that in St. Paul. We had 8,000 people throwing, I don't know, 15,000 or 20,000 pounds of food around in the third inning for a minute and a half. Gave everybody ponchos. Recreated the great scene with John Belushi, and really got not only a lot of great coverage, but I had people coming up all night after they threw a lot of stuff at me, I might add, coming up and going, this was our favorite promotion you've ever done. So
really, I still
the bar's pretty high right now.
You know, you've been on the show a couple times. I don't know if we've really dissected the whole fun is good thing. Can you talk about how fun is good really began? And I know you spend the off season doing conferences and symposiums, but tell the listeners like a 101 on what fun is good is about.
Well, you know, I feel guilty almost now. I mean, just look around, just drive to work. People who are, you know, who had the misfortune and have to work on Christmas, for example, watch people drive. And there's a mood across the country. We're very divided, and the fact is that you have to approach the workplace, I believe, with some joy. And you're going to spend 40% of your life there, and it might as well be fun. And I got so tired of people going, well, you could do that in ballparks because it's a whole different deal. People are coming there in their leisure time. But you can do it almost anywhere. And it's simply by applying a few really simple procedures, if you will, in the morning, is providing people places to gather, providing people with time, including people. You know, inclusion is such a buzzword now, but not in the way that we usually mean it. If you want to have a great marketing department, if you want to have a great sales department, then what you have to do is include everybody, because all inclusions means are taking a lot of people's ideas and distilling them down and using the best. Not dumbing them down, but being very democratic, or as democratic as you can be given the numbers. And it encourages conversation. You know, you look at people, you walk into a lot of job sites now, and people are siloed.
Yeah, right.
I mean, never have we had the ability to communicate as a species. So the human animal has elevated the ability through technology to communicate around the world in a nanosecond, except we're all much more isolated.
Sure.
And I believe that it's the humor is the quickest point as has been said, you know, between two people. And so we simply go in, we have a comedian, we have two or three people who take care of things like interpersonal relationships, dealing between generations, and we make it all fun.
Is there a website? There must be. I think there is, so people can find out more about having fun.
Yeah, there's the Fun is Good team. And basically, you can dial up and see some of our partners in crime who have really elevated the idea of not networking, but personalization of office mores. So we have an ex-anchor, Joan Steffen, who worked for years on the Home and Garden TV thing. Her big show was she would go in and show you how to decorate your home, and you know, for under $500. But she talks about heartfelt conversations and how important they are. And Cy Amundsen, a guy I think you know, yeah, from ESPN, he does ESPN Snapchat 3 days a week. He talks about how approaching his job at ESPN with humor. He did the 40th anniversary, or maybe I'm wrong, maybe the 25th anniversary of Cool Runnings, the 25th anniversary of the Jamaican bobsled team, and interviewed Dougie Doug and had him at the ballpark. And that opened up the vistas at ESPN for him, got him, you know, obviously more important in some people's eyes, interviews, but all because it was applied with a sense of wide-eyed wonder and joy, and that's important.
Okay, we got to take a break. I want to get two more things out before we let you get back to your Christmas turkey, and I want to talk about Christmas memories with your family. I got to talk to you about Harold Baines going to the Hall of Fame.
All so, right.
Yeah.
St. Michael's finest.
So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal with Mike Vec. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on our Christmas extravaganza. On the phone from Charleston, South Carolina, is Mike Vec. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well, thank you, David. I love the Darlene version, love version of that record. And, you know, take them or leave them, Spector had something going on for a while.
He sure did. I love that. That's a great album. Talk real briefly. I mean, I know some of the people in your family, but what are your Christmas memories of just Chicago, Baltimore? I mean, just, you know, we're on for Christmas. So
well, we lived in a little known fact. When we lived in Chicago, we would go out to Downers Grove to my Aunt Peg and Uncle John's house. And they lived out in the middle of four fields and a mink farm. And we would
I think I've been there.
Christmas Eve, and I remember that Dad and Uncle John would go somewhere surreptitiously and come back with the most beautiful tree and the biggest tree that we'd ever seen. And I never saw a sold tag on one of them. And they were always freshly chopped. So I think that there was something going on. And, of course, the wonderment of the books you were looking for, or a collection of tin soldiers. But it was a time that no matter who was having an argument or what disagreement was going on, Christmas just for 36 marvelous hours made everything wonderful. And indeed, it's that way now. We always got to make a wish. And of course, right now I'm wishing my son Night Train returns to the White Sox as a marketing guy, and I wish that my daughter Sci-Sight gets a little better. Uh-huh. So, you know, it's a joyous time, and it reminds us of what wonderful creatures we are, and we should spend more time thinking about that, and more importantly, talking about it with the people with whom we're close.
Yeah, you're right. I wish it could extend a little bit. You know, it seems like there's, you know, I wish it could go on for 5, 6, 7 months. It seems like things, you know, that'd be great. How's your mom doing?
Yeah, you get to say Merry Christmas. You get to say Happy Hanukkah. You get to say whatever your greeting is. And and look people in the eye, and there's just kind of a there's a joyousness in the community of man, if that doesn't sound too 60s like, and we definitely need to rediscover some of those connections.
Your mom doing okay?
I'll tell you something. What a marvelous creature to be almost 98 years old and to think and be as sharp as she is. It's really something.
You're very lucky.
She and Lionel Smith are like the wonders.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. So I know we can't let you go without talking. I want to do a little schooling for the listeners about your dad scouting Harold Baines. I mean, you guys were neighbors out there in Maryland. I mean, tell the story yourself. But your dad found him, and he stuck with him for like 5 or 6 years, right?
Yeah, he was. There was a wonderful house painter guy by the name of Bob Bowen, and Bob managed at the Little League and the Pony League and the high school, pretty much always as a volunteer. And he called Dad and he said, "Better wander out here and take a look at this Baines kid." And so my dad went down to St. Michael's and watched him play a couple of Little League games. And he come home and he just couldn't get over his wrist, the way his wrist rolled through, and he made contact. And he followed him from then on. And, of course, in 77, he made it the White Sox first pick. And we go to see him in Baltimore. And Dad says to me, "Well, you know, why don't you go back home and visit and watch him his first day in the cage?" And that was the year we had little Oscar, you may remember.
Yeah.
And Richie Zist, the Southside hitman. But what people might not know is that Harold Baines had a bigger afro than Oscar did. And Harold got in the cage and never hit the ball out of the cage. And of course, we didn't have cell phones, so the old man says, "Call me at 8 o'clock. I call him at 8 o'clock. He goes, "How was it?" I said, "You don't want to know." He said, "How was it?" I said, "He didn't hit it out of the cage." I said, "His afro, he kept banging it on the top of the cage." The next day, he steps in. He got no afro anymore. He powdered the ball. And he is the working man's hero. I know everybody's debating.
Yeah, right. I was
guessing.
Where
is Harold Long?
Yeah.
Look at the durability. 9,900 at-bats. Good Lord above.
Yeah.
He was the working man. He was like the Jim Landis who happened to last a lot longer, more durable.
You know, I had that in my notes. Like I told you, I spent all Christmas working on this show. But in that same draft, the son of Jim Landis was drafted 10th by the San Francisco Giants. In that very same draft.
And I never had this. What you know why Landis isn't talked about all the time as one of the great center field, even in Chicago history? Because Landis positioned himself. He always got to the ball, and he made it look easy. And Baines was a lot the same. He didn't make spectacular catches because he was so spectacular at doing his homework and positioning himself. So, you know, he made it look easy because he did his homework. He went to work every day like all of us who go to work. You know, he just went to work. He was not a journeyman. I mean, he hit 400 home runs. Okay, he only hit 380 something, but you know what I'm saying.
Are you going to go to the induction?
Of course, I wouldn't miss that.
Yeah.
Come on. Hey, you know, what do you think? He's going to go in with a Cleveland hat on or something? Come on.
I went to your dad's, and I was like, reading some stuff. I mean, you talk to your dad when you go to Cooperstown. You don't talk to him at Lake Michigan, where he may be, but you talk to him at Cooperstown.
Yeah, I don't know what people's particular religious persuasions are, but there's something about the hall, and it has nothing to do with the 300-plus members or the Jeff Idelson or the president and I are dear friends. What it has to do is the respect for the game. And I just like to sit across from his plaque, which happens to be, you know, right down from Larry Doby's. And I just like to muse on what those guys went through, how they did it with such style and dignity and most of all, courage, intellectual courage and physical courage. And, you know, I just feel closer to him there than anywhere else. Doesn't make the lake a bad place, but I don't know where he is with the tide, you know, with that water movement now and those winds. I don't know that we can count on that he's on the Chicago side of the lake.
They've remodeled. I went to Miller's Pub for lunch this last week, and they remodeled a little bit. I think the Vet Corner is still there, but they took down a lot of celebrity pictures, and so you got to check that out next time you're in Chicago.
Yeah, well, I keep close. You know, my son Night Train's down here for Christmas, so I keep close watch on it, and so I make it back up there. My sisters are all up there, and so. But it'll never be the same Miller's Pub, no matter what.
Yeah.
That original one, boy, oh boy. You could always find every thief in Chicago because they were all there just about closing time. That included the Vex for anyone who's taken offense.
Well, thanks, Mike, for taking your time out on Christmas to join us and give us a little update on everything. It's always great to talk to you. I want you to come in the studio sometime and just sit here with me and talk.
Yeah, you know, it's so uptown for you to have Nocturnal Journal on WGN. I'm just still getting used to that.
Dave. I don't think they listen. That's what I
said. I really am. Merry Christmas, man.
All right, same to you. Thanks a lot. We're going to take a break now. And we'll be back with our tribute to the Golden Apple Diner.